This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
All right, we are halfway home on a Tuesday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Looks to be another lovely day out in America's finest city. Yesterday was beautiful. My God. Friggin' almost November, man.
Starting to get a little cooler.
A little chillier.
Saw the lows, at least, for the temperature over the next, like, week or... Gonna start hitting the 40s.
40s?
At least in Escondido.
Is this Milwaukee? What are we doing here?
And then, is it not... we gotta set the clocks?
Yes, clocks
weekend?
Are going back, which is the best time of the year.
For you.
For me. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor. Yeah, my kids will now... 7:30 bedtime will now be 5:30 bedtime. I'm going to bump it up 2 hours. It's pitch black. They have no idea. They have no idea the concept of time. So at 5:30, it's going to be, all right, let's go. Let's go do story time and brush our teeth, get everything dialed in. And I'm going to be chilling in bed at 6. This is great.
So when the weather gets cooler,
yes.
My wife said something yesterday. She said, that's when I want to start going to the movies. And I go, I think it's opposite for most people. It's like when the weather's hot, you want to get out
into
of
the cool,
heat, yeah. Into the cool air conditioning. But when it's hot, she wants to be outside. She wants to go to the beach and do outdoor things. And when it gets cool, she wants to go and do inside things like the movies. And I disagreed 100%. I'm the other way around. I'd rather cool off at a movie theater on a hot day than be out in the heat. But she went yesterday and saw the new Saturday Night movie about Saturday Night Live and raved about it. Like, I haven't heard her rave about a movie like that in years. Absolutely loved it. And I haven't. When was the last time you actually watched Saturday Night Live? I used to watch it all the time, but like 20 years ago.
I watch clips on Twitter that come
out. Yeah, I mean,
out,
I'll see the weekend update clips on Twitter, but actually not sitting it. Down and walking.
What time does it start? Like 11? I'm dead asleep.
No, they actually show it now live on the West Coast.
That's so
8:30.
At 8:30. Yeah.
Sleep.
Still Saturday night. Yeah, 8:30. Woods can't make it at this point.
Very tired.
Usually, I watch it. I still watch it. I watch it on Sundays.
I watch it the next day.
Yeah.
So she watched the movie, and when I got home last night, we actually went and found the archives of like the first couple of episodes ever of Saturday Night with, you know, Chevy Chase,
yeah.
And like Paul Simon was the host and musical guest. He actually played a one-on-one basketball game, like as the bit, and Marv Albert was announcing it against an NBA player. It was weird to see it, like the like before the show became the show and when they were still trying to feel it out. But anyway, that's what I did last night.
I did not even know that there was a Saturday Night Live movie out. I had no idea. I haven't been to a movie theater a long time. There hasn't been one that has come on the screen that I said, I'd need to go see that in the theater. The one that I thought I was going to go see would be the new Joker movie, but I heard it was panned. Like they said it was one of the worst movies of all time.
I've heard the bad reviews as well.
And listen, you can make your own, make your own decisions. I will watch it when it's out on a streaming platform, but I probably won't go to the movies to watch it.
I haven't been to the theater since 2019.
Yeah, it's
and
been
I
a long
time. I don't know that I'm going to go back anytime soon.
Yeah.
Like, I have no... There's been movies that have come out since 2019 where, like, oh, you have to see it, but you got to see it in theaters. I'm like, I'll catch it on streaming.
Yeah, I'll just watch it on streaming. I'll be fine.
I got a pretty big TV. Like, it's cool.
All these people in the chat, no one agrees with me that the daylight savings is a good thing. I love it. I couldn't be happier.
You just want to get your kids to bed earlier.
It'll be darker, like, earlier at night.
Yeah.
That's literally, I think, your only reason.
And we get that extra hour.
We don't... Well, I mean, yes, we get an extra hour of sleep on Saturday, but you don't because your kids will sleep the same amount that they always sleep. They don't know to sleep another hour.
They don't. They don't. But I'm fine with that. It's the fact that now it's going to be weird in a week when we're sitting in here and it's pitch black still, at this time.
No, it'll be much lighter in the morning.
No, it's lighter in the morning.
Right now it's good. 7 a.m. It's still dark out.
That's right.
It'll be bright and shining like at 6 a.m. when we start our show.
I like the dark, man. I like the dark. I like putting them down early. The 7:30 almost kills me every night. So I'm bumping it up. I'll push the envelope. We'll start at like 6:30, but I'm going to push the envelope to try to get it by 6 that they're in bed every night. I need them asleep is what I need. Because they're very, very difficult to deal with. So I'm looking forward to it. Now that happens what?
Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
Saturday night, early Sunday morning.
Okay. Because I got Dia de los Deftones on Saturday with Bo. And I wanted to remind you guys, they have released more tickets. So if you were thinking about going, but there weren't tickets, they've released some more tickets. Go get those. It's such a fun night out. And then we've got a full day of baseball on Sunday. He's going to be whipped, man.
I just realized, though, that means I have an extra hour of birthday this year.
Yeah.
I have a 25-hour birthday as opposed to a 24-hour birthday this year.
Is that the first time that's happened?
I think so.
Yeah, that's very cool.
The daylight change used to be earlier, and they kind of moved it back, and I don't remember it ever falling exactly on my birthday before.
What are your big birthday plans?
I have, let's see, we're doing a dinner out. Shelly and I are just going to do dinner out one night. I think I'm going to go out with my boys one night and then lunch with my mom on my actual birthday.
Boys like your homies? Because we didn't get an invite.
My children.
Oh, I thought you meant like you and your boys got a reservation.
I have no other like friend plans, just family plans at this moment.
Well, we'll have our party in
here
on Friday.
Yeah, Friday morning.
Right. That's with your boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I never really refer to you as my boys.
Really?
I refer to my kids as my boys.
That's true.
We're well aware. Yeah, we're aware.
And that would be weird to refer to my kids and you two as the same thing.
I don't even know if you refer to us as your friends. That's the other thing is I have no idea.
My good colleagues.
Colleagues. It's such a, it's such a slap in the face, man. It really is.
Just like, these two idiots that I work with.
Again,
highly respected
colleagues,
co-workers.
If either of us got hit by a bus, he would not miss one beat.
Nope.
Not one single
Someone
beat.
Someone would have to keep doing the show. Do you want me to miss a beat? Is that what you're hoping for, that I'd miss a beat or two?
Yes.
I try not to miss any beats.
Adam calls him, hey, Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Hey.
So Woods and Paul got in an accident.
They're not coming
They're not going to be there tomorrow.
Sammy, we got Sammy coming in. What are we going to do?
Are you going to be okay? Yeah, what do we got tomorrow?
Yeah, what's AJ Casavell's on? Easy. Piece of cake.
Right,
sounds good.
Big League Wednesday. Okay. So it'll be you and Italian Paul?
Yeah,
Sammy?
Yeah.
Who's coming in?
Sounds good.
Let's get her on the floor.
No big deal. Fine. I'll do it. Oh, my God. Oh, well, listen. Wish you a very happy 49th. It's still weird that I'm older than you. It's still so weird to me that I'm older than you are. And I'll tell you, 49's been pretty good so far.
That's been a good one.
Yeah, it's been better than 48.
Is there not that inexorable ticking clock?
Yeah. Oh, bro.
I feel like once I hit 49, I go, this will be my last November 4th in my 40s. This will be my last November 5th in my 40s for
I'll
an entire year.
49's been a good year. 49's been good to me, certainly. 50 awaits, and there's a milestone there, certainly. But I like how I'm bringing in my 50th birthday.
I like that you've already planned exactly what you're doing on your 50th.
Me too. It's kind of a load off, right? And it's something I get to do alone, which is even better. But yeah, 49's been good, man. I'm surprised it's been this good. 48 was tough.
I think my late 40s better than my late 30s.
Oh, by far. I was a train wreck back then. So this is way, way better. Well, I'm looking forward to your birthday celebration. We've got some tricks up our sleeve.
First, we have Halloween, though.
On Friday, we got Halloween on Thursday. Are you working?
Yeah.
So who hands out candy at your house? Your kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually one of them at least is at home and doing the candy handout.
So no neighborhood goes harder than our neighborhood at Halloween. It's like nothing you've ever seen. I'll take video for you this year.
You think that, but in the North County in San Diego, it feels like every other neighborhood goes extremely hard for Halloween.
This is truly unbelievable. There's haunted houses every corner. Every house is open. I mean, they just go so big. My wife's given me you're staying out past 7 o'clock. I don't care. There's no game that you need to see. You need to be out with your kids. So I'm staring down the barrel of probably like 5 to 9 trick-or-treating. Like, I think she's going to push the envelope on this till about 9 p.m.
What I can't understand are people who make permanent or semi-permanent changes to their appearance just for Halloween. Cutting their hair for a Halloween costume. Our colleague down the hall, John Flint, came in clean-shaven this morning. And I have not seen him without a goatee ever, I think, and it was jarring, and I said, whoa, no, what happened? And he goes, I needed to do this for my Halloween costume. I go, that's going pretty hard, because you're still the day after Halloween, you're still going to have the clean shaven face and you're going to look weird, but Halloween will be over.
Yeah, be careful with your Halloween costumes. Again, I saw a tweet yesterday, essentially, that said somewhere some white person is setting up a Halloween costume that's going to ruin their lives and cost them their job. So,
oh, I already saw it.
I saw one. Happened. I saw a Diddy one.
Yeah.
And I think the person that did the Diddy one, he made the crucial mistake of doing blackface, number one. So you can't do that, obviously. Like, use your head. But also, I'd say typically stay away from Diddy.
Yeah.
Is that a fair thing to say?
Aren't you supposed to dress up as horrific monsters for Halloween?
Yes, true.
Does he not qualify?
He is a real one, though, and not a, you know, oh, look at me, I'm Freddy Krueger.
So like, you can't be Jeffrey Dahmer or...
I'd say maybe now you could be Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, some time
there needs
has
to be
to pass.
some lag.
Like, I expect there to be like Menendez Brothers costumes because
yeah,
of the Netflix show.
It's out.
That one's even questionable. I mean, it starts and stops with blackface though. Don't do that.
OJ was huge a couple years after. I mean, the worst one I ever saw ever. And I don't get super offended by things. This one offended me. It was Payne Stewart. It was like a bloody Payne Stewart after the plane crash. And it like broke my heart. And I went, man, that guy's got a family. And like, he didn't do anything wrong. You know what I mean? He wasn't a monster.
Right.
He just passed away. So the guy dressed up and
with the knickers.
The knickers.
I mean, it's
and
very,
the hat.
It's easily identifiable.
Easy to do.
And gruesome, which
it,
is
yeah,
kind of the twofer on Halloween. But
it
I
is.
Did, yeah. You know, in a very recency. That still hurts and stings.
Yeah. I'm dressing up as someone from real life.
Oh.
It's very niche.
Am I dressing up as a real life person or a fake person? I was a real life person last year.
You were inspired by a real person.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, last year we just put you in a tank top and called you Pat McAfee.
Which was a real life person.
And it was great.
I mean, not a horrible monster, but
no.
Monstrous in some ways.
He has his moments. He's
a talented
guy, but like... He catches a lot of grief.
Oh, there were a lot of Steve Irwin costumes with his, you know.
It's tough, yeah. Dude. He's a nice man.
Yeah,
you know?
Seem like it.
Paulie's costume, he's had several costume changes. I think what you're going with, I like. I liked your other one. I did.
Yeah.
Mine's going to, you're not going to know it when you see it. We're going to have to do a side-by-side. But it's. I think it's appropriate, too, because I do feel like the Dodgers are about to sweep the World Series. I'm not dressing up as Tommy Lasorda.
I know you've already gotten my costume. I just want to say, I don't want to be Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, you won't be.
Okay, good.
That would have been funny.
That would have been really funny.
Is there going to be Dodgers with people like slings on their arms?
Him in full gear. Him in full Dodgers uniform would have been such a good troll. And now I'm pissed.
That should just be a punishment.
A punishment. Well, you called it. You said Dodgers win last night. And you said Dodgers in five. Do you still think it's going five? I actually don't.
I don't see... I mean, I think if the Yankees win tonight, it's actually going six.
Wow.
If they can win tonight, I think they'll win tomorrow. I just don't see the path for tonight. I really don't. It's baseball. That's the one unknown factor, that things can change on a dime in the sport of baseball. All it takes is a swing or two, and you know, you get a home run and you get a lead and you got a chance. But this is not the matchup I would favor if I was the Yankees, with Heel going up against the Padres or the Dodgers bullpen, which has been so good.
Short leash for Heel tonight. Kevin says in the chat, this is pretty good. I'm dressing up as the Padres offense in games 4 and 5, meaning I just sit at home with everyone wondering where I'm at. I don't think we'll have anybody at our house to hand out candy. So I'm going to do the bowl.
Take one.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah, do that. Why? You're not.
We have a gate, like,
hold on.
Away from
hold
the on. Door.
Now, this is interesting. You're going to be home.
Yeah.
And you're still not going to answer the door and hand out candy?
No, because our door is like a good 20 to 30 yards around the side of the house. It's like a side front
you
door.
You can't just set up like a lawn chair and just
like
wait around
chairs?
For people to come
oh,
by?
I could. I'm specifically not going
don't
to.
You want to see
I'm not
going to
sit outside for hours.
Don't you want to see the little kids in their costumes?
We don't have a ton of trick-or-treaters anyway, so they're just going to get the bowl treatment right
they
outside
get
the, of the gate.
And you guys will be inside with the lights off, huddling down in your room.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God. So, yeah, I think we're going to leave the bowl, but we're not going to have anybody home. I promise you, I'll try about halfway through. I'll go, hey, I'm going to head back to the house, and I'll just hand out candy and handle it. She's not going to
refill the bowl.
Refill the bowl. She's not going to let me. I'm trapped for 4 hours of these lunatics getting high off their own supply as we walk from house to house, I promise you.
See, Weston said, I think the Dodgers lose on purpose to come back to L.A. to win.
That'd be two.
Wood suggested that as well.
I forgot
you're
there
not,
were two.
You're not losing twice on purpose.
No.
You know, to come back for a game six. If you get back, if the Yankees get it back to game six, I'm not saying that they're going to win the series. The Dodgers will still be big favorites, but I think the dynamic of the series changes.
Oh, there is big time. A
ton,
pressure.
There would be a ton of pressure on the Dodgers in that game six at home, knowing, wait, if we lose this one, our whole season now comes down to one game.
Bro, you see how loose they're playing right now? I mean, they look like they are having the time of their lives. Meanwhile, the Yankees are gritting their teeth. They can't even breathe. The pressure is completely on them, and the Dodgers are just loose and having fun. But I promise you, if it gets back to LA, yeah, dude, it's going to get real, real tight. And they still may win the World Series, but you can't do anything until you win a game tonight. I just don't think the Yankees have it in them. I just don't think they do. It looks dire.
Crazy for a team that won, what, 95 games over the regular season that doesn't look like they could ever win again at this moment.
Yep.
And it's not like they've been bodied in every game. It's 6-3 with a grand slam in the bottom of the 10th. 4-2 and 4-2, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they haven't really been in the last two, though.
But like you said, it's two late inning, you know, ninth inning pair of runs, and it doesn't tell the whole story. They just look lifeless.
It's easy in hindsight now, but I sure felt really like, I don't know, mid to late September, the champion was going to come out of the National
League. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I thought the Phillies were the most dangerous team, or standing in the Padres' way, that is. And then, of course, the Dodgers. I thought the Mets would probably beat this Yankees team. Whether the Guardians got there, I don't know. Like, it just didn't feel like it was the American League's year.
Well, you kind of touched on it there, but there was one big difference between the Dodgers and the Yankees all season long. Even though record-wise, what, three-game difference in the regular season, I think there was one big difference, and we can talk about that. We're going to take a quick timeout. We'll check traffic. We'll come back. Bottom of the hour, don't forget, AJ Cassaville is at the World Series in New York. He's going to join us as well and talk some Padres baseball. All ahead with more Bennett Woods on 97.3 The Fan. All right, tell me if you agree with this. The difference between the Yankees and the Dodgers this year, I think, is actually comes down to what we're seeing right now, is that while the Dodgers were flawed, more flawed maybe than we had seen in a while, they never really went into a major lull.
No.
The Yankees did. Remember? Well,
there was a period.
I mean, the Padres made up some ground, but that was mostly because the Padres played well. But remember, the Dodgers had the second best record after the All-Star break, next to the Padres, I believe.
Am I insane? I feel like they were playing like crappy 500 baseball.
They were
for like a month.
They had a period where they're playing around 500. The Yankees had a period where they were playing badly. Yeah. Remember, they started out and looked like, oh, wow, the Yankees are really, really good. And then they went in around the All-Star break and just went,
yep.
And then they kind of
say that
recovered, as you see teams do. It's not a death sentence to have a lull during the season. We've seen a lot of World Series champions. The Texas Rangers last year went
September.
On a major lull in September. Then they recovered and won the World Series. But the Yankees clearly were susceptible to going cold altogether because we saw it during the year. I don't remember ever seeing the Dodgers just go insanely cold for a month. That just didn't happen. And, you know, they just have enough guys in their lineup that it's almost impossible that all nine of them are just going to be struggling at the same time. Whereas the Yankees only need two or three guys to struggle, and all of a sudden,
they're
really, really a short lineup. And that's what we're seeing in this World Series.
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, the worker bees, man, the 6, 7, 8, 9s, you know, have just been horrific for the Yankees. Now, also, their three-hole hitter has been horrific for the Yankees.
See, Kevin says August was bad for the Dodgers. How could August have been that bad if they had the second best record in baseball after the All-Star break? It couldn't have been that bad.
Look it up.
All right, let me see. Dodgers.
We'll wait.
Looking that up right now.
Yeah, Paulie's on the case. Check my texts.
Schedule, second half. No, they were never bad. They had one stretch from September 4th through September 14th, where
they
lost six games in six out of nine. That was their worst stretch in the second half of the season.
Yeah, so listen, this is why nobody should get gaslit into believing that this wasn't the team to win the World Series this year, okay? Like,
let's see, in August it went 19-8.
Okay, that's a very good month.
16-10 in September.
Okay, good
month. So July, they went 11-13.
Okay, yeah, there you go,
they went into the All-Star break. They lost 6 of 7 going into the All-Star break.
That was the break.
That was their worst stretch. They
played. Their month breakdown was 15-11.
At Philly and at Detroit. They had a bad road trip going into the All-Star break.
Against two playoff teams.
Two playoff teams, and that was it. They had one 5-game losing streak earlier in the season as well, and that was it for the Dodgers. They never really had an extended period.
We didn't either. Five?
No, the first half of the season, the Padres had the 4 or 5-game losing streaks, and they were all congregated within a month and a half, 2 months of each other. That was the Padres' lull. It wasn't as bad as the Yankees' lull,
But it was the stay afloat.
Padres' worst month was April. They went 12-15.
Yeah.
16-11 in May, 15-13 in June, 13-9 in July, 18-10 in August, and 16-8 in September.
That's unreal, man. They finished exactly doing what they needed to do. And it's crazy. But he just made the point in the chat. I love money in the chats, or I need money in the chats. So they look like the worst first place team ever. You're absolutely right. They do. They look horrific. Defensively, offensively. Pitching wise, bullpen's been okay. Bullpen's actually been pretty good for them, which was not considered their strength. Their bullpen has held them in these games. Their starters have let them down. Their offense has let them down tremendously, save a couple of late inning runs. But the defense in game one murdered them. I mean, even Smoltz and Davis conceded on the game last night. Oh, if they just played a clean defensive game on game one, they win that game easily, and it's so true.
You say they look like the worst first-place team ever, but, I mean, the Brewers finished in first, didn't win a playoff game, correct? The Phillies finished in first. The Astros finished in first and got knocked out early. The Guardians finished in first and lost to the Yankees, despite heroics. They did, but the Yankees aren't the worst first-place team. They're not even the worst first-place team in their own league right now.
Kyle Glazer with a tweet last night, beginning with Game 4 of the NLDS, the Dodgers are 9-2. They've outscored their opponents 70 to 33 in their last 11 games. That is the definition of getting hot at the right time.
75-33 if you count the last 6 innings of the game 3 when Walker Buehler gave up the 6 and they pulled within 1 but didn't come all the way back.
Yep.
They have been on a dominant run.
Yep.
All right, we'll come back. We will take you out to New York. AJ Cassavell of MLB.com covering the World Series. I wonder what angle he's on for the series this year, and we'll talk Padres offseason with AJ as well. Coming up next with Bennett Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. I wonder, must be a weird feeling. Maybe not. AJ is a professional, but covering the Padres all season, and now he's covering the World Series and, you know, kind of writing a lot about the LA Dodgers. Brent Honeywell, former Padre. Freddie Freeman and his dad, some stories that he's posted for MLB.com this week. AJ standing by at the World Series in New York, going to join us right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. And joining us right now is our friend AJ Cassavell from MLB.com, Padres beat writer and currently on the World Series beat. How is New York, AJ? Good to talk to you as always.
It's always good to be here. I don't know. It's kind of, it feels like the series hasn't really gotten going yet because I arrived on World Series coverage expecting this to be one that maybe went 6 or 7 games and was like an all-time classic. And after one game, it felt that way. And then all of a sudden, now it feels like the series might just end before it even really got started.
Yeah, it doesn't look good for the New York Yankees, who have just not shown up offensively, and you're around. What are the pulse of the fans, the pulse of the writers up there in New York? What are they saying?
Yeah, I think in New York, everyone wants to talk about Aaron Judge, and understandably so. He's Aaron Judge. He's, if not the best hitter in baseball during the season, he's one of the top 2 hitters in baseball. But like for me, this series has come down to more than Aaron Judge. Like you can blame Aaron Judge if you want, but the difference between the two teams is that if Aaron Judge struggles, the Yankees can't do anything. If Shohei Ohtani struggles, the Dodgers are deep enough where they can where they can still go out and beat you. And I think like. That's a testament to the roster building of the two teams. It's a testament to just roster building in general. I mean, we saw the difference between the 2023 and 24 Padres. What happens when you have a deep team with different options and different ways to beat you? You're better than when you have a few stars or a couple guys at the top of the lineup that you rely on. And the Yankees have gotten some contributions from Juan Soto and Giancarlo Stanton, but the bottom of that lineup right now is just, I don't know where there's even like a threat. Like, they have some guys that can get on base. They have some guys that can walk, but it gets through those. You get through Giancarlo Stanton and maybe Jazz Chisholm right now. And then you're wondering how they're going to get back to the top of the lineup with guys on base. And that's a flaw in their roster construction. And the Dodgers right now are just doing it kind of the opposite way, where the bottom of their lineup's pretty darn good.
Yeah, you're not worried so much if you're the Dodgers pitching staff. Once you get through basically Giancarlo, I mean, you're not super concerned about Jazz or Wells or Trevino or Volpe. I mean, they're just, it's just not it, man. It's just not it. There's just no firepower from those guys, and you know they're not getting on base. And I just think Aaron Judge in the middle, obviously, man, when you make, you know, the money that he makes, when you have the regular season that he has, to have him look so lost at the plate is just, and this isn't the first time that's happened to Aaron Judge in the postseason. That's mm-hmm. a tough narrative to carry around on those massive shoulders in that city your entire career.
Yeah, and you wonder if he's going to get back here. Like, this is kind of what he's worked his whole career for, and now the Yankees are one loss away from facing this offseason where they don't know if they're going to get Juan Soto back. They, like we've just talked about, they have a whole bunch of roster construction flaws. There are some good young teams in the American League. I will say, I mean, the Yankees are probably lucky they're not in the National League. I've been watching this series and watching the way the Yankees play, watching their lineup. And I think probably four National League teams would beat them in the World Series. Probably, like, this version of the Yankees probably beat them pretty easily, the four teams that were last, the Mets, Phillies, Padres, and Dodgers. I think it might be seven. Like, the Braves and the Brewers and even the Diamondbacks might have beaten this team. Like, the National League, the way the second half unfolded, was a whole lot more competitive than what it was in the American League. So maybe there is a path for the Yankees moving forward. That being said, yeah, I mean, Aaron Judge's struggles, they're very pronounced, like I said, because of the lack of depth in this lineup. But and so I think, like, that's maybe the main flaw, but it doesn't make his struggles any less real. Like, he and Shohei Ohtani both only have one hit, and the Dodgers are thriving. But Ohtani's at-bats have at least been better. Aaron Judge has looked lost at times. He's behind on the fastball. He's chasing pitches that I don't watch a ton of the Yankees, but every time I do, he's at least patient enough at the plate to lay off those breaking pitches out of the zone, and he usually does a lot of damage on them. So this is not the version of Aaron Judge I've ever seen before, and it's a version, look, he's one of the best hitters. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. He's one of the best hitters we will ever see, probably. And for all of that to kind of go out the window in the postseason, it's a tough narrative to have, especially in a city like this one.
If you're right about the Yankees, you know, just not being good enough to beat any of those National League teams, and I suspect you probably are, AJ, then this is not really on Aaron Boone as the manager. However, you know, you will question some of the decisions. The biggest one, obviously, bringing in Nestor Cortes there in Game 1 instead of Tim Hill. Tim didn't exactly disprove Aaron either when he went in and got the heart of the order when he came in yesterday. I don't know that you can, yeah. You know, it's apples and oranges a little bit, but that's probably the one decision he might want to have back.
Yeah, I think that's the one. Aaron Boone's taking a lot of heat, and it's honestly, it's kind of fun. That's the fun thing about a World Series like this, where a lot of people are watching. I'm getting texts from people who I don't normally associate with watching non-Padres baseball that are into it and mad about Aaron Boone's decisions. Nestor Cortes or Tim Hill, there were a few Game 1 decisions that were really questionable that he drew a lot of criticism for the next day. I thought he got pretty much all of them right, and then the Cortes-Hill one is the one where I'm not around the Yankees. I generally defer. If it's a choice between two pitchers of the same hand, two left-handed pitchers, like, I'll generally defer to the manager because I think he knows better with the matchups and what each guy's got. But I also know Tim Hill pretty well, and he doesn't seem to be the kind of guy who would let the moment get to him. That being said, like, you still got to face Shohei Ohtani and presumably walk Mookie Betts, or maybe not, and then face Freddie Freeman. it probably, I don't want to say probably, but the chances are when you have bases loaded and three Hall of Famers coming up and you're clinging to a one-run lead, whoever you throw in there is going to have a tough time getting those out.
Yeah, no question about it. Talking to A.J. Casavell here on Ben and Woods this morning, let's pivot to the Padres a little bit. We did the futile exercise earlier about Jim Bowden's list of who the Padres may target. And, you know, none of us really have a sense of what to expect until you start to see, you know, last year was easy. I mean, you knew Juan Soto was going to go. The only thing you were waiting to see was what's the return going to be? Is it going to be enough? It's probably never going to be enough, but can we stomach this and move on? This year's a little bit different, AJ. How are you, when you look at the Padres, you know, coming back in 2025, what's the sense you get?
It'll be an interesting offseason because, like you said, last offseason was what it was. They got themselves into a place where, I mean, had they kept Juan Soto, they're probably not in the playoffs, and they're probably losing him right now for nothing. So they set themselves up at least decently well by adding Michael King and Dylan Cease going forward. The Joe Musgrove injury throws a little bit of a wrench into it because now all of a sudden, I think if you go into next season with a healthy Joe Musgrove, the need for starting pitching is maybe a little less urgent. I think you're still looking, but you're maybe not looking for that Musgrove caliber arm. I think the Padres need that kind of arm now. I think they can't go into next season. They've got a front three of Yu Darvish, Dylan Cease, Michael King, and that's pretty darn good. But without Musgrove there and knowing what starting pitching is and how volatile it is and how susceptible guys are to injuries or struggles or whatnot, with Musgrove having had surgery and out for the 2025 season, I think that's suddenly an area of need. There's obviously areas of need offensively, and maybe you can use a left-handed arm in the bullpen. But that's probably where I think the focus would be. AJ Preller's done a great job, obviously, in the past of finding those kinds of starting pitchers in trades. I don't know what other teams view his farm system as right now and how highly thought of it is after all the trades he made, but I do know he's outstanding at replenishing it. I guess if we're tiering what the Padres' needs are, the replacement type guy for Joe Musgrove maybe at the top, and then obviously re-signing Profar or finding a bat that can do what he can do, and then filling out some of the bench pieces and the depth pieces that, like I said earlier, made them so offensive or effective in 2024.
Talking to AJ Casavell, Padres beat writer, MLB.com, covering the World Series this week. And AJ, you also wrote about the Padres farm system this week, in particular the two biggies at the top, Ethan Salas and Leodalis DeVries. And while Jackson Merrill was a revelation, what's your opinion on how the Padres will proceed with those two guys? Will we see them in 2025 at some point? Because honestly, if they did come up and have a Jackson Merrill type trajectory, that would solve a lot of problems for the San Diego Padres. Both of those guys right there together. But I think you also have to be cautious with two kids who are still incredibly young and not being overly aggressive with their arc.
Yeah, and they're two positions of obvious need. So like you said, like that would solve some problems for the Padres. But those two positions are premium positions where I think it's tougher for a guy to just break right through and become productive. Now, I guess that's kind of the Jackson Merrill trajectory. I thought last season, I thought as highly of Jackson Merrill as anyone, and I thought the Padres were maybe a little naive for throwing him into the fire as a center fielder who had never played there before. I was wrong. So maybe there is something that one of those guys can prove in spring training and make that ascension to the big leagues as quickly as Merrill did. Both those guys are younger. Both those guys have development ahead of them. I don't think the Padres are at all going to enter the season planning on that being their option. I think what they're going to do is look in free agency or in the trade market or wherever they can acquire a catcher and or a shortstop / if not a shortstop, they move guys around and acquire that extra bench piece or whatever. Like, they're going to look for short-term options because they know that they're pretty well set in the long term because they have DeVries, because they have Salas. And so I don't think they're on a Jackson Merrill trajectory. That was kind of maybe the point of what I was writing was that AJ Preller. It's always hard to kind of read between the lines of what he says, but with what he said there, I think he kind of views it that way. I think he said, we look at everyone individually. It's not Jackson Merrill did this, and now these guys can do this. those guys have to produce like Jackson Merrill did and make it very clear to the Padres that they're on that kind of trajectory. Because you look back to last spring training, and I mean, if anyone, if you just threw someone who knew nothing about baseball and had them watch a month of spring training, you'd say, well, that guy won the center field job easily. I think those guys will get a chance. We will see them in spring training most likely. But to ask them to go on the Jackson Merrill trajectory when like very few people in baseball history have done so, I think that's probably unlikely.
Last thing for me, AJ, and I guess I always want to try to parse why I got something so wrong. And when it came to the Dodgers this postseason, the one thing I thought that I knew was that they did not have enough starting pitching to carry them through the playoffs. And you can't rely on your bullpen, even a good one, that much over, you know, three series to get to a world championship. And unless something incredible happens, I'm going to be very wrong there. Why, other than just it's baseball, why was I so wrong about the Dodgers pitching rotation? Because it's been really
My answer is going to be that it's been good, but they have relied heavily on their bullpen. They've used some off days, and their offense has been what's mostly carried them until we've gotten to the World Series. Now we're in the World Series, and the Yankees' bats are struggling. I'm maybe the last one to buy into the Dodgers' rotation. I don't know. I still see the same fatal flaws you see. I just think they have the bullpen to make up for it. I mean, they bullpen gamed their way to a game four victory. Their offense is what did it against the Mets. And now the Yankees offense is struggling. And I think the Dodgers have turned in some excellent pitching performances in the World Series. I'm not going to deny them that. And they have good pitching, good starting pitching. I wouldn't have called it World Series caliber starting pitching before the postseason, but they're also elite game planners. They're elite at figuring out how to get those 27 outs that they need. I think whatever the narrative of Dave Roberts is in San Diego right now, like he's managed a pretty good postseason and he's known when to get those guys out of there and go to his bullpen, which has been good. And that bullpen has hung on by a thread when a lot has been asked of it. And that's why I think the Dodgers are where they are right now.
Yeah, he's been damn near flawless for the first time.
Even Woods has to acknowledge.
Of course. I mean, look, listen, without having Clayton Kershaw on your roster to try to get 17 innings for in three games, that's probably helped him tremendously. They're like, maybe you can't use him. He's not available. Oh, all right, well, guess I'll have to use somebody else. I mean, truly, like that I say that as a joke, but it's not a joke. Kyle Glazer sat in here and went through like the 17 worst mistakes he's made in the postseason, like 14 of them had Clayton Kershaw in it. It's insane to think about. He's a great pitcher, but you know those moments in October, he has buried that team. And without the need to find a slot for him to get his moment, Dave has been spectacular.
Yeah, and he's done some weird things in the past that always feel like he's being impulsive. And Kershaw is the obvious one,
right?
But And off the top of my head, I can't recall specific examples from 2018 or whatever, but it seems like he's done what his impulses have been. And I think this postseason, without doing that and kind of just managing his way through games relatively by the book, it doesn't seem like these decisions have been Dave Roberts going with his gut. It seems like last night, Walker Buehler had faced that lineup twice. Walker Buehler has not been that good this year. He faced the lineup twice and gotten outs, and he hadn't allowed a run, but the Yankees were starting to hit him. You manage by the book, you take him out. You manage with your gut, maybe you say, well, he's dealing, he's gone through five scoreless innings, and that's where you run into some trouble and where he has in the past. And he's kind of stuck to the script. He knows the guys that he has, and I keep waiting for that impulsive mistake.
Yes.
I was waiting for it in the Padres series.
Yeah,
I was waiting for it. I mean, I guess
never
the Mets
happened.
Series, there weren't many managerial decisions for him to mess up because every game was a five or six run game one way or another.
Yep. AJ, we're out of time.
Thank you, brother.
Safe travels, man. Right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
AJ Cassavell, MLB.com. We're at the end of the hour. Paulie's got a Rondo report. More coming up next year on The Fan.